I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Altuve jumps him. Left center field, back at the drag, at the wall, it's gone. Jose Altuve on the first pitch goes deep with one out here in the first inning of game three.
Jose Altuve gives the Astros a 1-0 lead early in the game yesterday. That was nice, having a lead the whole day. Boy, it made the day so much less stressful to operate with a lead pretty much from jump. That was really cool. And Jose Altuve, in the process, Seth Payne, in the first 40 games of his postseason career, now has 12 home runs. I am going to read to you a list of players who have more home runs than Jose Altuve through 40 games of postseason play.
Okay.
And it's not a long list. Nelson Cruz and Carlos Beltran both have 16. Babe Ruth, some dude named Babe Ruth, has 15. And another feller named Mickey Mantle have 13. Huh. Jose Altuve is next on the list at 12.
So Mickey Mantle is in his sights. That'd be awesome. How many does Mickey Mantle
have?
Well,
it's through 40 games. So that, you know, the 40 games have come.
Oh, through the 40 games. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so what's the next benchmark? How can we get Altuve to take down Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth in something?
That's my project for this afternoon.
Right, yeah. So through 50 games or something, see if it still holds up.
Yeah, that's my project over a nice half a bottle of whiskey or something.
Yeah.
Do some serious stat research.
That's the best time to do math is while drinking.
That's right.
That's how.
It's when I balance my checkbook.
That's how trains crash.
That's right.
Buddy.
Exactly.
You'll be the Casey Jones of the train of the sports world.
Yep. Here's how you put together a contract here. Speaking of numbers, real quick, Gerrit Cole, since May 23rd, 19-0, 1.59 ERA, 166 batting average against, a WHIP, walks hits per innings pitched, of 0.81, and then nearly 14 strikeouts per nine innings.
Yeah.
That's a pretty damn good. I don't have any way to go look up contract years in other sports and in baseball to measure. And I wish there was some sort of composite score that would just tell me, yeah, you know, this contract year Gerrit Cole's having is a 97.2 or whatever. I wish there was some way to compare it. I just can't think of an athlete who's done better in a year leading up to free agency than Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, and it's it's been a strange feeling having a. I don't feel bittersweet about it because I don't assume that he's going to go elsewhere. I'm kind of looking forward to the intrigue of, wow, what's Jim Crane going to do? What's he going to do? Does it affect them whether they actually win the World Series or don't win the World Series? I don't know. I feel like emotionally, whatever hometown discount or whatever home field advantage the Astros have in retaining Gerrit Cole, like let's say that he gets equal offers from the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Yankees. I feel like winning the World Series this year increases the Astros' chances of retaining
You'd
him.
Be on a dynasty at
he's
that point.
He's tethered here at that point. He's got to think, okay, whatever the advantages of going to the Yankees or back home to pitch for the Dodgers might be, I've got a history here. I've got championships. I could have won multiple championships with the same team.
Yeah, I think, and look, the team has done a good job, I think, of taking this core group and I think you feel good about a couple things if you're Gerrit Cole and you're looking at Houston. And again, I think you make a great distinction that the money needs to be, if not equal, in the neighborhood.
Pretty close.
Right?
Yeah, well, we've got the
state income tax.
Yeah, yeah. Athletes never seem to care about that.
The cost of living.
I don't know why. I used to argue,
as
a player, I used to argue this. I used to tell guys, like, why do you not care? And it is. There's that. With a lot of guys, it's the ego of like, well, I want to be paid a certain amount.
Sure. Yeah. And some of it is you're just smarter than a lot of them when it comes to looking
at this. Yeah, but that's not like it's complicated math. I don't think it's an intelligence thing. I think it's an ego thing.
You think?
I don't know.
They like to, when people go to SpotRac, look up highest paid, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but you even see that up. See that part, of not that they have to be the highest paid or anything, but I think just intuitively when you hear that number, the top line number.
Yeah.
Plus, let's be realistic. Maybe those guys have better tax advisors than me. Or I should say aggressive tax advisors.
There you go.
Like the Rolling Stones haven't paid. The Rolling Stones as a band have paid like 2% income tax. They got all kinds
they
of
deduct everything
set up offshore and everything. Yeah, Mick's actual residence is some, island in the Caribbean.
Good for his heirs.
Yeah, good for his heirs.
But I think what the Astros have going for them, Seth, to go back to Cole and looking at free agency and how he may evaluate this thing, is if the money is in the same neighborhood, especially if they've won a World Series, you look at it and go, boy, this is 2 out of 3 years. Now, granted, he wasn't there in 2017, but this is a team that's a dynasty. It's a team whose core group has their windows extended at least for the next 2 or 3 years, if not longer, in the case of Altuve and Bregman. You have an owner who's clearly shown that he's aggressive. Inherently, he's aggressive by giving you a contract, Gerrit Cole. So the owner, Jim Crane has answered the bell on everything. There's nothing you need to look at with the Astros if you're either a free agent on the outside or, in the case of Cole, a free agent on the inside, looking at it and going, okay, this owner's not going to do whatever it takes to win. It will be interesting to see. That, to me, is the most interesting thing about the Gerrit Cole thing, Seth, because obviously you want to keep Gerrit Cole. Obviously, he is the most valuable piece that you have right now on this team. I think without question, A.J. Hinch said it himself, he's our best pitcher. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. So it's, you know, duh, as far as a baseball standpoint. I'm curious, though, what critical mass is for Jim Crane when it comes to the financial part of it.
And that turns into how much are you going to pay in the luxury tax? And the first time, for a first-time offender, it's not that bad, but we're talking more than we're going to be.
I don't know how baseball's luxury tax works.
It's not as punitive as it is in the NBA. And that's as far as I'm willing to go in saying about on the radio. Every year, by the way, every weekend of the past, for the past 2 years, I've said, this week I'm going to learn the NBA salary cap.
How's that?
I'm
going to
sit down.
You?
It's a very. I'm 0 for 104 now over the past 2 years.
That's not a bad thing to sit down with a bottle of whiskey.
You know what? I got to get Beam a Thug. I'll take him out to a nice dinner or something, and then we'll retire. I'll rent a conference room. We should do that.
We should do a Stern talk of the NBA salary cap.
That'd be fun. We should.
I would actually go to that.
I actually think we'd actually get a pretty good turnout for that.
Yeah.
We have Beam a Thug or one of these other guys that are, you know, kind of amateur cap experts.
Beam a Thug is the Clutch Fans salary cap expert, for those who don't know.
Yeah, we could have a symposium. We could get Texans Cap to come in and do the NFL salary cap.
All we need is like 50 dorks to fill that Verizon Artist Lounge down there. And we got two right here.
They make good money, too. We could probably charge admission to it. We won't, because we love you all.
Right.
But yeah, we probably would.
Not. Maybe we won't charge. We'll see. So it sounds like it's going to rain today up in New York.
It looks like this is going to be delayed, huh?
At least, if you're saying like postponed, push to tomorrow.
Postponed, right? Yeah. Do you want? Okay, one, we've established that you and I both want them to play today, if it's at all possible, and that it would actually be even better if it turned into one of these games that had multiple rain delays. The more you can do to tax and stress the Yankees bullpen at this point, probably the better.
That's how I feel. This is how I feel about the series, independent of the rain for a second, is that the Astros are up 2-1. The Yankees bullpen has been seriously taxed the last two games. And let's pretend that it's going to be sunny out today or tonight up in New York. This would be a game where I would expect the Astros to smell blood and go after the Yankees. And this would be the game. You brought up that stat earlier, Seth, that the last six times the Astros have been shut, they've been shut out six times this year. Each of those times over the next four games, they score a bunch of runs. They score like 22 or 23 combined runs in those four games. This would seem to be the game where they explode today, where the Yankees have a bullpen game with a bullpen that is taxed and an Astros team that is ready to break out and have a performance like that. So if empirically I just feel like this is what's going to happen today, then I want today to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I feel like this is what they're primed to do, then I don't want anything to interrupt that, and including rain. So I feel like a rain delay, a postponement of this game, a pushing back of the series to where games 4 and 5 would be Thursday and Friday at Yankee Stadium, and now there's a quick turnaround for games 6 and 7 in Minute Maid Park. The Astros would still be in the driver's seat, don't get me wrong, but I feel they're primed, if they play this game tonight, to pounce.
The other thing is that if they play today, it'll be a bullpen day 100% for the Yankees. For the Astros, what does that mean? A bullpen day could end up being a really nice Urquidy start.
Yeah.
If it's Urquidy, and maybe A.J. Hinch, he's called it a bullpen day, maybe to take a little bit of that stress off of Urquidy, that maybe in A.J.'s mind, he's thinking, all right, I'm going to run this young kid 5 innings, hopefully, but he doesn't need to know that.
Right.
He's just going to go out and, hey, buddy, no pressure, no stress. If it's 1 inning, it's 1 inning. If it's 2 innings, it's 2 innings. So maybe it actually ends up being an Urquidy start. That would be ideal. But if you don't rain out today, the Yankees are going to start Tanaka in game four on Thursday, which would mean that it would be Tanaka versus Greinke most likely.
Game four. You're saying if the game today is canceled.
If the game today was canceled, yeah. Then you push it off. Then Boone has already said he would start Tanaka on Thursday.
Right.
So then it becomes Tanaka versus Greinke.
Yes.
And I don't like that as much as bullpen versus bullpen today.
No, I don't either. Now, you're going to get that in game five anyways.
Right, I know. But game four and going up maybe 3-1 is a whole different scenario.
Absolutely.
And then with Verlander and Cole still waiting in the wings.
Let me bounce this off you. Nobu texts in, hey, guys, a rainout is actually better for us. I only trust two guys in our bullpen, and I get the feeling Hinch does, too. We need to rest arms more than the Yankees. I disagree with
that. They've got more arms, but they're more taxed. Yeah. The Yankees' arms are more taxed.
Yeah.
The Yankees had to pitch five yesterday. Astros only used three relievers.
I don't think Hinch I don't think he only trusts two guys either. I think there's more guys than two that he trusts in the bullpen.
Well, one of the big wild cards is Peacock, and because Peacock, not only can he can go long, mm-hmm. if depending on how the nerves in his neck feel and how he's responding. So, yeah, I think that some of the concerns about the bullpen, you got to remember also at the end of the season were when Presley and Peacock were both banged up and out. And it's not that, I guess, depend on is kind of a hazy distinction. Do I feel 100% rock solid about them? No, but I feel pretty solid about the general state of the bullpen right
now. Yeah, I think, look, if Harrison Osuna pitching the way they have over the last few appearances goes a long way to locking down what you need out of this bullpen if you get what you think you should get out of Verlander, Cole, and Greinke, right? I mean, in theory, you're just trying to get to the eighth inning in this thing if those two guys are pitching well.
And he used Abreu the other day just to it's going to be – I feel good about – but it's not going to happen today, so I got to stop talking about it. It's almost definitely going to get rained out today, right?
Meteorologist Seth saying
No, I'm just asking you. I'm reading the tea leaves. It seems like – we're not reading anything. It seems like we're reading more and more about how this game's going
to
get.
The heavy favorite appears to be cancellation of the game. Yeah. All right. Is William O'Brien, general manager, a trendsetter? We may have gotten an indication that yes, he is. Yesterday, we talk about it next. So our friend Alan Hunley texted and said, "Hey, what about Carlos Beltran's contract year?"
Because you were talking about how Gerrit Cole's got to be having one of the best contract years in any sport in history.
No doubt.
And Carlos Beltran's probably the one that jumps into a lot of people's minds.
It probably does because it was here, at least for the second half of the season. The Astros made the trade for Carlos Beltran. He was a Houston Astro for the last 90 games of 2004.
Before you even say it, I'm going to guess, this is my gut instinct, that it was very good, but it was more that it was part of a resurgence of the Astros on into that World Series season than it was about the individual performance.
I think that's a very good guess by you.
Okay.
I would also add to that it probably has a lot to do with his actual postseason performance.
Ah, not the actual season, but
He was good in the regular season. He was an all-star in the regular season. He had 38 home runs, 104 RBIs, 267 batting average. He had a 915 OPS. Really good.
38 home runs doesn't impress me unless you're 5'5" and named Altuve.
That's right.
There you go.
And a 915 OPS. 38 home runs and a 915 OPS on this edition of the Astros. We call that the seven hole hitter.
Yeah.
Back then,
good
it was
job,
remarkable.
Good effort. Yeah.
Yeah,
good,
back then, it was fairly remarkable. So, yeah, really good. I mean, I don't have a conversion chart where I take 38 home runs, 104 RBIs, and a 915 OPS and convert it to something in the pitching world.
I think it
ain't even close to Cole.
Right. It's not record setting. Those aren't record setting numbers where Cole has had these, not just to mention consecutive wins, which
he's having a Mike Trout year is what he's having.
I'm okay with mentioning consecutive wins, even though pitcher wins don't really matter anymore statistically. It's impressive when you win that many games in a row.
Especially if it supports your argument.
But especially the number of strikeouts, the ERA, all of this, just been incredible.
Yeah. So Beltran, good contract year. Not as good as Gerrit Cole's. I will say that. Not as good as Gerrit Cole's. Plus, I think that contract year leaves Astro fans with a bitter taste in their mouth.
You know who's helping
Gerrit? Does he use the Astros to get a bigger deal from the Mets?
There's
he played the Astros like a fiddle.
Gerrit Cole. Well, it was
like a boot all those years.
We blame the agent more than anything.
Right, right.
So I think that the one guy that Gerrit Cole really needs to thank is Charlie Morton. Because with Charlie Morton's success this year, teams can look at Gerrit Cole and say, oh, okay, you know what? There's a residue from whatever the Astros are doing with their pitch selection and everything and how they've transformed Gerrit Cole. He can continue that elsewhere.
He can bring it with him.
Right. Now, the Rays have a pretty damn good analytics staff themselves. I feel like you got to go to a team that's going to be as smart with the pitch selection and everything, and to do all those things that have helped Gerrit Cole if you want to get anything close to where he is.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point, though, about Morton. Is it, you know, here's a guy who actually, he came here, got remade, and then continued he's actually been even better as a Ray than he was as an Astro.
So. Whereas with Keuchel, okay, Keuchel's decline started before he left, so you can't blame it on just him leaving the...
I think we're going to look back at Keuchel and go, the 2015 season where he won the Cy Young is a total outlier for this guy. He's been by and large an average to slightly above average pitcher since then.
Right, but part of it is too, is like his game was such a a finesse game and a perfection-based game that once it slips even just a little bit, it's going to have a big effect. And especially once the maybe the strike zones change a little bit and once they're not giving him the same calls, then all of a sudden it evaporates. Yeah. I feel bad for Keuchel because I feel like the game kind of evolved beyond him.
And at a really bad time. Like, it evolved like right as he was hitting free agency. It would have been better if it waited like another 2 years.
We're not
going to
give you these. We're not going to give you just quite as low a strike zone, and you're not going to be able to paint these lower corners. And yeah,
it'd be interesting. He's a free agent again now.
Yeah,
like the whole Dallas Keuchel free agent thing last year was a big story. At least here locally, it was because he sat there till June. He's going to be a free agent again. I wonder what good looks like for Dallas Keuchel out on the market. Like what his expectations are. The market didn't come close to meeting expectations last year. He was decent in Atlanta. He was their game one starter in the playoffs. His ERA was still like 3.8 something in Atlanta. You know, he's average.
You know, I was viciously defending Greinke to John McClain.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was based on a misunderstanding and I had misheard him.
Yeah.
it's worth noting. I mean, in terms of his actual playoff performances, sometimes it's tempting to say, well, it's a small sample size, so what does that really mean? He really hasn't had a good playoff performance since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
He let up, he allowed zero earned runs since then, and it hasn't been a bunch of playoff performances, so there's still a small sample size, but since 2015, here are the number of earned runs he's allowed in games. 5 in 2015, and then against Colorado in 2017, he allowed 4 runs in an appearance. Against the Dodgers in 2017, he allowed 3 runs, and then, of course, this year, 6 runs, and then 3 runs. So, really, he hasn't... In the last 4 years, he hasn't had a good playoff appearance.
No, not dominant that you expect.
Neither you or I blame him for the loss in game one of this series, but it certainly wasn't what you would call a good performance. It was an acceptable performance.
It wasn't a performance it wasn't a performance that matches the hype of the day that they made the trade for him. And that's not his fault that there was hype, but the feeling the day they made the trade was they just clinched the World Series because of this guy.
But that's where, and that's again where we go with the rain out. Okay, so if the game is played today, then it's bullpen versus bullpen. And tomorrow you have Greinke versus Tanaka, correct?
Yes.
If there was a rain out today, then tomorrow becomes Astros, it becomes Greinke versus Tanaka.
It's Greinke versus Tanaka.
So you're not outrunning that Greinke Tanaka matchup.
No,
regardless.
That's happening. Yeah. Just a question if it happens in Game 4 or Game 5.
All right.
So, is William O'Brien general manager a trendsetter, Seth?
It looks like he might be because now Jalen Ramsey has been traded for 2 first round picks, and now there was a cacophony of voices saying 2 first rounders for a mere mortal human being player in Laremy Tunsil. How could you spend 2 first rounders on a trade like this, you morons, you Houston Texans? Maybe I was one of them. And now you're hearing the same thing. I don't think you're hearing any of that from people with the Rams making these trades. Maybe people are criticizing this. The Rams are going to go 5 straight years without a first round pick from 2017 through 2022. Yeah, 21.
Yeah, 21.
21. And yet, I think the difference is they just went to a Super Bowl last year.
Right.
So people are saying, okay, you're definitively in your window. I think with the Texans, what will happen is, and this is how people will rewrite their takes, they'll say, well, this is what they'll say 5 years from now. I won't. I'll admit that I was wrong. If I am indeed wrong, if the Texans don't end up in trouble or anything, I'll say this. I was critical at the time, but what worked out and what happened was that the Texans put themselves into a Super Bowl window with that. 5 years from now, other people will be saying, well, the Texans had to make that trade. They were in their Super Bowl window. Like,
chicken and egg.
When you didn't realize they were in their Super Bowl window yet, you thought it was a horrible move.
Right.
Once you realize, and this is why it has to work, if they are indeed Super Bowl contenders, then you say, oh, okay, they made that move because they were in their Super Bowl window. I think that's what people are saying about the Rams right now. Well, yeah, it's aggressive, but they're in their Super Bowl window.
Yeah, and I look, and you're right. Like, the Rams are already in the Super Bowl window. The Texans have, it seems to have found themselves into their Super Bowl window here. To me, what's interesting about both of these trades, both the Tunsil deal and the Ramsey deal, in which both the teams, the Texans and the Rams, gave up first-round picks in 2020 and 2021, is how crucial it is for these trades to work, not just so that they win games. Obviously, the goal is to win games and win a Super Bowl, but it's almost like success in 2019 and 2020 is baked into their rationale for making these deals. Presumably, they're making these deals because they feel like, boy, if we get Jalen Ramsey or if we get Laremy Tunsil, we all of a sudden feel like we're on the short list of teams that can win a Super Bowl. And these first-round picks are going to be somewhere 28, 29,
yeah, that's
30.
Also, yeah, yeah.
Right? Like,
well, that's where, like, when the Dolphins made the trade, they're thinking, okay, we get great, we get first-round picks. Yeah, if they end up being 28th, 29th overall, then all of a sudden that trade doesn't look as smart or great
right.
for the Dolphins.
That's
yeah.
right. One of the things that made the Deshaun Watson trade palatable for Cleveland Brown fans, I would imagine, as Deshaun Watson sits on the short list of MVP candidates and Baker Mayfield's throwing three picks a week, it's a little less palatable now than it was during the offseason. But one of the things that made the Deshaun Watson trade work for the Browns is that the Texans gave up a first-round pick to move up and get Watson. Well, it turns out the Texans did that in a year where they ended up going 4-12 the following year, and they were able to use that pick to take Denzel Ward, who's going to be one of the best cornerbacks in football for the next several years. So that's a big deal. When you trade these first-round picks, teams get lauded for getting these first-round picks, but there will come a day when, A, these first-round picks get put into some sort of sequence, and, B, you actually have to use them on players. And then it looks a little different when you actually attach names and draft slots to them.
It's interesting with the Rams because right now, boy, they just don't look like the same football team. I would have, a few weeks ago, I might have said, well, yeah, their problems are on offense, not defense. But now they've had a couple of defensive snoozers, too.
Yeah.
They've got problems everywhere. But it is interesting that I think what made them special, what really you thought about with the Rams was, oh, okay, that's Sean McVay offense. This is a really aggressive move. For a team in the Rams that needs to improve their offensive line,
This is a final segment of the show.
It's a myth about New York, by the way. We were talking during the break about just various things.
Bring it on the air, Seth. What is the myth about New York?
Well, various things are peeving me, including the guy that was standing above Reddick when he made that catch last night.
There's nothing peeving me about that guy. He is angry, and that game ruined his night.
His tears taste like Subway grease, this guy. And so I'm happy to see that guy angry and mad and shaking
and
his fist.
If you don't know what Seth's talking about, go find the highlight of Josh Reddick catching Didi Gregorius' deep fly ball, which scared me into wetting myself almost in the, I want to say it was
everybody thought it was a home
inning.
Run.
Yeah, two
Gregorius
men on,
thought it was a home run. The
everybody
fans, Reddick himself, I think, thought it was a home run.
Reddick catches it in front of the wall, and there's a Yankee fan right above Reddick who is the angriest individual in the entire ballpark. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so and that's saying something in New York. But so no, but just the myth of New York in general is, hey, it's the greatest city in the world, which I understand the appeal of New York and everything. And it is, in a lot of respects, there's no other place like it. But physically, the actual sensation of being in New York, if you're over 6'2", especially, it's a physically miserable place to be. Everything is built for, like, textile workers in the 1850s. Everything, like every hotel room, anywhere you go, and even the newer buildings, because space is at such a premium, everything is constricted and tight and confined to the point where I felt like anytime I go anywhere, I'm in a coffin just because I'm folding myself in and out of various seats and underneath doorways and everything. If you're a smaller person, then by all means, go for it. If you're 6'2" or taller, I would say steer clear of Manhattan.
Are there particular cities that are built better for people of your size?
Well, anywhere in the Midwest, of course, because Texas in general.
Big corn-eating folks out there.
Yeah, like Texas, it's a point of pride that everything, you know. Like
that's true. The state is
bigger,
perfect for you.
You're basically commie if you're not building something bigger. Well, that is the difference. And this is just cities in general. When I go from inside the loop to like further out in the suburbs, the parking spots get bigger and bigger. I get jealous sometimes of some of these brand new planned communities out.
And you and I both drive
Katie
big cars.
And everything. Yeah, yeah.
I drive a truck, and you've got the deceptively fast van.
I could drive a mini school bus comfortably out there in the suburbs.
Parking is tricky for me.
So what I was saying about before the break was, What the one thing I noticed during training camp about the offensive line, when I looked at the difference between the first O-line and the second O-line, and it was interesting because the second O-line during training camp was largely composed of last year's starters. There was such a huge difference.
You're saying first string and second string?
Yeah, first string this year. The second string of this year was, they were first string last year.
They were last year's starters, yeah. Right.
And this was before Laremy Tunsil even got there.
That's right.
Was just simply the difference in athleticism. It just flat out. So, and I remember I was on Matt Weston's Battle Red blog podcast, and mm-hmm. I kind of convinced him to feel better about the offensive line. But what I was saying was I feel better about it in 2020.
Yes.
At the time, I thought for sure they'll be better in 2020 because they're more athletic. I don't know about this year. And through the first few weeks of the season, we all had our doubts and reservations about the offensive line. It was when Deshaun and O'Brien clicked and the ball started coming out faster that you could really start to see everything come together. And then lo and behold, you spent a trade on Laremy Tunsil. You've got a first rounder and a second rounder on the offensive line that are new this year, and it's a better offensive line. They just flat out, they can do some things that athletically the guys last year couldn't do.
Yeah.
And it should keep getting better if they could just, damn it, stay healthy.
Well, stay healthy. And my guess is they're going to look at this and go, okay, look what happens now when we invest in the offensive line. My guess is strategy-wise, this is going to continue to be part of their strategy, even though they don't have a first-round pick the next 2 years. Is it draft capital? Draft capital, there will still be significant draft capital used on offensive linemen. And maybe in free agency, they're aiming a little higher than guys who were backups for other teams and things like
that. Or, you know, one of the best moves the Rams made, and it was a short-term move, and maybe that's one of their issues right now, is Andrew Whitworth.
Right.
Like the Texans are in a position now where they have some of this younger talent on the offensive line where they could go out in the offseason next year and pick up an Andrew Whitworth or one of these older guys or something, and because they've got a core, solid three or four guys that you can depend on and trust. So, well, four guys, really. So that's a nice spot to be in. I didn't expect it to happen necessarily this year. If Tytus Howard can come back and be healthy during their playoff run, then obviously that's great.
Yeah, I don't think it's any like huge secret, and you just alluded to it, that week six last year, right? We're that's exactly a year ago. The starting offensive line for the Texans in week six last year, left to right, was Julion Davenport, Zach Fulton, Nick Martin, Senio Kelemete, and Kendall Lamb. The two guys that remain from last year are Nick Martin and Zach Fulton. The three guys that are new are Laremy Tunsil, Tytus Howard, and Max Sharping. Laremy Tunsil, Tytus Howard, and Max Sharping got swapped in for Julion Davenport, Senio Kelemete, and Kendall Lamb.
And
it's a massive upgrade in talent.
Boy, and I think Kelemete, if you're healthy, he can be at least serviceable, but Davenport and Lamb as your offensive tackles.
Brutal.
Good guys. I'm highly skeptical.
This is where we mentioned how great an interview Kendall Lamb is to him. Yeah.
Kendall Lamb's the biggest disappointment because I feel like athletically he should be able to make something out of himself. And maybe he will. Maybe he's just an extreme late bloomer and he just needs time in a different system or
something. We'll see. That's Cleveland's problem now. That's where he signed. Mm-hmm. Kendall Lamb.
Martinez Rankin was a disappointment this year, too. And I know that Dan Fouts was gushing over him standing in front of J.J. Watt on that one play.
For three plays in the beginning of the first quarter, yeah.
But he was just a disappointment in that I felt like he had a lot of upside, and he still does. I almost wonder if he was, maybe hiding an injury or something. I thought athletically in training camp, he didn't look like the same guy.
He got injured right out of the chute his rookie year, and then I thought he was asked to do some things that were a little over the top. Like, hey, come in and play left tackle in New England when Chantrell Henderson
I don't even factor that one into it.
But who knows? Maybe that kills your confidence at the beginning of the year.
Do you remember when Reggie White just beat that poor offensive tackle to death in the Super Bowl when the Packers played the Patriots?
Yes.
That was a guy named Max Lane, which is an awesome name. But he was he'd played for Naval Academy in college, and then he was an offensive tackle pressed into duty against Reggie White in the Super Bowl, and he got humped to death. Not like a sex crime, but like the hump move that Reggie White had. Half of Reggie White's hump move highlights are against Max Lane in the Super Bowl. So you end up getting remembered for that, and it's not really fair. So poor Max Lane ended up being a serviceable NFL player. But as a rookie, he was thrown to the wolves and humped to death by Reggie
Poor
White
bastard.
On national television.
Nothing like getting humped by Reggie White.
But then it was one of these things where I met Max and I liked him. I remember I ran into him at IHOP a couple times, sat down and had to do it. But I, I kept wanting him to ask about that. I wanted to ask him about that Super Bowl. I had to wait until I knew him about 3 months because I wasn't really – I didn't want to bring it up, you know.
And then, and when you brought it up, what happened?
Oh, it was cool. We talked about it. We joked and laughed.
He was good-natured about it?
Oh, yeah. Well, by then we knew each other. Then we were friends. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you don't want to be the guy, the first guy that comes – like these guys that think they're going to kid they're going to bust – Clint's chop about fumbling the ball. First time they meet him. Right. Like, hey, you remember that incredibly devastating moment in your life?
Here's where I take advantage of your good nature.
Yeah.
And making fun
of
you.
I know you can't punch me in public.
Exactly. Here's where I take advantage of the laws of assault.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Laramie Tunsil, Brian Baldinger does the Baldy's breakdowns on Twitter. If you're not following Brian Baldinger on Twitter, his breakdowns are outstanding. He does about two and a half minutes of all 22 film on certain players each week. Actually, two players got some serious love from him this week. Lonnie Johnson was one of them, but the other one was Laramie Tunsil, who Brian Baldinger says is the best left tackle in football right now.
Laramie Tunsil is the best left tackle in football. He's simply not watching. He put on a clinic on Sunday in all phases of the game. I mean, his technique, the only problem with his technique, he makes it look too easy. I mean, he can dance with the best of them. I mean, you count how many seconds he's protected the backside of Deshaun Watson to make this throw down the field. Man, you know how much better Deshaun Watson is right now because of Laramie Tunsil at left tackle? I mean, just ask him. Look at his clinic. Look at his clinic. The feet, the set is flawless. I don't care who you want to put out there on him right now. He's the best. Deshaun Watson knows it too. And he's got time. Time is the quarterback's best friend.
So Laramie Tunsil, and the film was great in this video, and he is in these particular clips, he is dominating Frank Clark.
You know, one thing, I talked to an offensive lineman when the trade was made, a guy who's pretty prominent, and he was like, he was more critical of Tunsil than he probably would have been publicly, but he said, and I'm going to disagree with him having watched Tunsil for a few games now, but what he said was that Tunsil's an independent operator, that he doesn't work well in conjunction with the guard next to him. Having watched him, the first couple games, I was kind of, I was wary of it, and I thought that I saw evidence of it, but I was also thinking, all right, this might be that he's just new to the scheme. I don't think that's valid criticism at all, having watched him now, and I think more than what it was probably was, he was playing for the Dolphins. The Dolphins.
Right.
Like, what exactly of playing for the Dolphins last year, the last couple of years, should have brought out the best in Laramie Tunsil? So, which brings me to this. I have to, as I always promised I would, I will give Mike Devlin a whole lot of credit for some of the improvements that have been made in the offensive line right now. My stance on Michael Devlin was always that I saw no evidence of him being a good offensive line coach, but there were potentially reasons for that, and it might just be that the talent with which he was working wasn't that good. So I wanted to see what it was like with talented offensive linemen. Now that he has talented offensive linemen, I think Mike Devlin's done some really good things with them. I think they look like they're tied at the hips at times. It looks like they're making good decisions on when to climb to linebackers. There's evidence of coaching there now, and it might have been as simple as he just never really had a bunch of good guys to work with.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the tendency in this genre that you and I and everybody here participates in is when things are bad, the coaches get more than their fair share of criticism. And then when things improve, we look at all the things on the field that are improving it and probably don't give the appropriate amount of credit. I don't think we've talked about the offensive line in two or three segments today and the improvements, the improvement in talent, the improvement in performance, and haven't even mentioned Mike Devlin's name. Sure as hell, if they were playing badly, that's all we'd be talking about,
right,
is Mike Devlin. Well, so I think I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, the other part with Devlin, though, too, is that I never knew necessarily just how much of it would be his fault versus how much of it was Bill O'Brien and or the offensive coordinator's fault for asking the offensive line to do things that maybe they can't do.
Right.
Or asking them to do too many things. Landry, what's up? Is that a new Astros shirt?
Yeah, I got it yesterday. So,
it's Houston versus all y'all.
Yeah, Loophole brought it. Loophole brought it in for us yesterday. So, yeah, shout out to Money Mike's brother, who sometimes was in the think tank, calls in. His brother brought a couple shirts. So
he runs with the old Dirty Reds crew out there in Baytown.
He does. Yeah. He does. So, you know, he's drank some Budweisers before or something like that.
That's right.
There were a couple
Coors Lights, I should say.
We had a couple of really smart baseball fans there yesterday. And that's why I enjoy these watch parties for baseball, too, because the hardcore baseball fans are so impressive to me. The recall. Because, you know, I struggle with the names at times. So when I'm sitting with somebody that can kind of rattle off the names of whoever the given opponent is, you know, oh, they're playing the Indians this series, and they know eight deep who their relievers are.
It's like
are.
Having a tour guide.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or my own little computer there.
Right.
I'm like, you remember in game one, the third reliever, they go, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Exactly. That was fun yesterday.
Yeah, it was cool, man. It was cool. I'm ready to be done with the Yankees, though, honestly. I want to see some old school baseball. Nationals, you know, they got a very good starting rotation, not a good bullpen. I'm not into this whole, you know, load up the bullpen and just bring them all out there. You would have thought Severino pitched 13 innings yesterday and he only pitched four with the way that Yankee fans were acting. I just think this is just not the way I like to watch baseball. I like to watch guys like Gerrit Cole gut it out and give their team seven innings when they don't have their best stuff. I don't appreciate what they got.
I thought it was impressive that Severino fought himself.
No,
out
it
of that
was
mess in the first. I thought he was going to be gone after 2.5 innings.
Yeah, it was. It was impressive, but I think he would have gone four innings regardless. I just hate the way the Yankees play baseball. I hate the way the Rays play baseball.
That's what's coming, man. The days of the Verlanders and the Coles are probably short-lived.
I just remember staying up past my bedtime in the early 90s watching Jack Morris with my dad against the Braves, and then you go through, you got David Cohn and Jimmy Key all the way up to the Yankees.
Because it's hard to put limits on some of these things or requirements, but you should build bonuses into the manager's salary. For if a pitcher pitches a complete game, you get a $1 million bonus.
I think if your starter goes six innings, you should be awarded a half run. I think if your starter goes six innings, you should be awarded a half run.
Oh, that is interesting. You might be onto something there.
It's gimmicky
as all get out,
but they could use some gimmicky.
You could do it. I feel like that's enforceable and simple. Something like that. Yeah. I don't know about the half run part.
Then you get rid of extra innings, and I think extra innings is kind of a problem in the regular season and all that.
How about if you get to the seventh inning as a pitcher, the first batter starts 0-1.
Something
like that.
Something. Yeah. We got to reward the old school, man.
One and one.
I'm going to tell you right now why he wants the half run. Hey, Landry, did you have over 4.5 runs yesterday for the Astros?
No. Yes, I did.
Would have gotten a push, huh?
I was not thinking about that when I said that. Yeah. But, yeah, I did. I did have that. I'm glad you brought that
up. You know,
I
know you weren't thinking about that, because if you were thinking about it, you would have taken the full run and the win.
Yeah. That was a good win, though. It was a very good win. I think it was Gerrit Cole's most impressive start. I think.
Oh, really?
He gutted it out, man. I think.
Because it wasn't domineering.
I think the thing that separates Gerrit Cole from other guys is that he's elite more often, but I think everyone can, when they have their best stuff, can put together some good performances. But gutting that out, no runs allowed when you're five walks, impressive.
Absolutely. What's going on In the Loop today?
We got a lot. We're going to talk about this rain. I just can't believe that Mother Nature is basically has the Astros by the balls right now. It's kind of bugging me. We're going to remember Jalen Ramsey, yet another star leaves the AFC South. And the Texans are the beneficiaries of that. Stanford Route's going to come in. We power ranked. We each did our top three songs about rain. So Figgy's going to do his at 10:40. Lopez is going to do his at 12:40. I'm going to do my 11:40.
Okay. Can you text me next time you plan on doing something like that so I can at least share mine with you during the toss?
Absolutely.
Okay. But you got to leave something for at the very least, we would have teased it. So look at that. Landry Locker saving baseball right there. That was a really good idea.
Good stuff.
I mean, well, in the moment, I'm going to think about this for a moment. It's probably a dumb idea, but.
All right, my friend, drive safe out there. It's raining.
Is it raining right now? It's raining here, too.
In honor of New York, it's raining.
I had that when I was still groggy this morning and I was driving. I thought, before reality kicked in, I thought about this rain is affecting tonight's game.
Who knows?
With the Yankees, yeah.
Some nasty rain this morning, man. It never drizzles here. It's always like a vehicular waterboarding. It's unbelievable. All right. We will be back here at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy the game or the rain tonight, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.